This is your Sound Off Extra review for Night 1 of Wrestle Kingdom 15, New Japan's biggest event of the year. For the second year in a row with back-to-back nights at the Tokyo Dome, I did not finish the main event until 10 minutes before Raw was going on the air, Legends Night. And I was going to just go right into Raw. I figured, well, you know, I may as well just go right in from one to the other, which was a mistake to begin with. Never follow a big New Japan show with Monday Night Raw. It's not a good thing to do. And I do it, though, and the first thing I see is a comedy promo for a Hulk Hogan iPhone. And that was enough for me. But it's kind of like one of you tweeted me, I forget who it was. It's like going from one to the other, like eating at a 5-star restaurant. And going right from that to getting a tuna sandwich at a gas station. And I said, you know what? That's a great analogy. I agree. But this year is a little bit different. Far fewer fans in the building than usual. I don't know what the total attendance was. But obviously a lot fewer people for obvious reasons. Lots of clapping, no cheering. Which is more noticeable in a big venue like the Tokyo Dome. This was not the classic Wrestle Kingdom show like some of the ones we've gotten in the last few years, but a lot of good matches and two great matches to close out the show. Night one was headlined by an excellent main event between Kota Ibushi and Tetsuya Naito for both the IWGP and Intercontinental, so the heavyweight and the IC titles, with Ibushi finally winning the big one. Finally pulled it off. I clapped. When he won, I clapped. I had no idea what they were going to do. I was a little worried there down the stretch, but once Red Shoes hit three, I clapped. Ibushi now has all the gold, at least for a few more hours. It was the right decision. It was the right decision to make. But I am worried that they're going to be tempted to get more heat on Jay White by just having him win on night two. I would say, don't do it. I know we have some Switchblade fans out there. It's not that I'm not a fan of the guy or his work. I just would not take the titles off Ibushi so quickly. You know, let him win, and then let him surrender the Intercontinental title to let other people fight for it. I'm really not a fan of the double champion stuff. I think we've gotten enough of it in all promotions. We've gotten enough of it. They've got plenty of worthy people on that roster, I think, who would benefit by having it to fight for. I mean, think about it. The IWGP US title has been on ice for an entire year. Almost 12 full months, because Jon Moxley has been unable to defend it. He's been unable to travel. And I don't believe, as part of his New Japan agreement, he is allowed to wrestle for another company on American soil. Or at least not New Japan. So I don't know that it's as simple as, well, he could just defend the title, you know, in the U.S. Maybe in the end that's something they can work out. But I assume that's the reason why he has not defended the championship in a very long time. So you've had that title on ice. You've had the Intercontinental title linked directly with the heavyweight title. It only makes sense at this point to just split the title. Don't unify them, but just split it. And just have one IWGP champion and one Intercontinental champion. The night started with the ring announcer sporting a Don King wig. For reasons I don't quite understand, he was introducing Riki Choshu, the legendary Riki Choshu, who carried his grandson to the ring with him to say a few words. By the way, I don't know how many of you have seen Riki Choshu on TikTok, of all things. I'm not even on TikTok, but it was like a month ago, maybe. Somebody had linked me to Riki Choshu's official TikTok page, and he has a bunch of TikTok videos up. He's become like a little, I mean, obviously in Japan, Riki Choshu's a celebrity. He's a very well-known name, but he's become something of a TikTok celebrity. So you can check him out on there. I think his handle is at Riki Channel, and Riki is R-I-K-I, by the way. At Riki Channel 1203. He's got some interesting videos up there. But the pre-show opened with the annual New Japan Ranbo. It was scheduled to have 22 men. They only had 21 for some reason. This year, the rules were that the match would continue until four men were left. Those four men would then advance to a four-way match on night two to crown the first King of Pro Wrestling Provisional Champion for 2021. So this was a new concept that they introduced over the summer. There is no belt. There is no physical title. I guess the winner at the end gets a little trophy. But they crown a provisional champion. And then that provisional champion defends the title throughout the year. At the end of the year, there's one final match, and the winner of that match is recognized as the champion for that particular year. So Yano was just crowned champion for 2020 a few weeks ago, and he got into the match on night two without ever having to throw a punch here. Or throw a corner pad, as it were, because it is Yano that we're talking about. I'll explain why in a second. Chase Owens was out first. Tomohiro Ishii out at number two, and Minoru Suzuki at number three. You know, as battle royals go, I mean, it was what you would expect. I don't think there were any big surprises here. I know sometimes they have surprises. You know, like in the Royal Rumble, you have surprises. I don't think there was any of that here. So Yano was the final entry. Yano was coming down to the ring, but before he could even get into the ring, there were only three other men left. That being Chase Owens, Bad Luck Fale, and Bushi. So you needed four guys. The last four guys standing would move on to night two. That meant that without even getting into the ring, Yano wins and he moves on to night two. And of course, he celebrated like he had accomplished something unbelievable. Yano is my guilty pleasure in New Japan. Rocky Romero, he went from the Battle Royal right to the commentary desk for the main card. A man of many hats is Rocky Romero. And I will say this, if New Japan ever does start working with AEW, which I'm sure they will, you could probably credit Rocky Romero as one of the key people responsible for making it happen. He has been something of a liaison between New Japan and talent here in this country. Actually, he's a very important part of that company. More than probably most people might realize. But he opened this main card by saying it's January 4th. And you know what that means. Which I thought was very cool. And I just thought, you know, man, Brody Lee in New Japan wasn't something I was actively thinking about. But I know he was very interested in making that a reality. And now in hindsight, it's like, man, I wish that would have been a thing. And it makes me sad that it never was. Kicking off the main card, we had Hiromu Takahashi, winner of this year's, or I should say this, I'm still in 2020, winner of last year's Best of the Super Juniors against El Fantasmo, winner of last year's Super J Cup. The winner goes on to challenge for the junior heavyweight title on night two against Taiji Ishimori. There was an early sunset bomb to the floor by Fantasmo, who worked over Hiromu's hand. And this is going to be a story going into the match. I know I just gave away the finish, but it is going to be a story going into the match. The commentators were making mention of the fact that his hand was all, you know, beat up. I mean, this guy, he was selling it like his hand was broken, even when this match was over. Fantasmo hit a Styles Clash for a near fall, then a V-trigger. Teased the one-winged angel. He was stealing everybody's moves here. Hiromu won with a Rana, trapping Fantasmo's legs forward for the pin. I thought this was a good match, tamer than I expected it to be, given who was involved. But a good opener to the main card. We had Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr. defending the IWGP Tag Team titles against the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tangaloa. G.O.D. had never won a match inside the Tokyo Dome coming into this show, which is hard to believe. I mean, if you remember how many years they've been there for and how many Tokyo Dome shows they have wrestled on. Not a single Tokyo Dome victory on their resume. Could they break the curse the way that Johnny Gargano broke the curse on NXT last week by successfully defending his North American title against Leon Ruff? Would they be able to break the streak? I cannot get over Tama Tonga's new look. He looks like a totally different person. with the shaved face and without the wild hair. I can't get over it. But Sabre and Tai Chi, they hit a stacked up superplex in the corner on Tangaloa for a near fall. Tai Chi got the hot tag. All four guys jump in. Tama hits a stun gun, or a gun stun, I should say, on Zack Sabre. So Tama grabs Tai Chi's iron glove gimmick that he loves to use. He grabs it, nails Tai Chi with it, and G.O.D. hit their finish to win their record 7th IWGP tag team title. This was the 8th straight year those titles have changed hands in the Tokyo Dome. And yes, the streak is over. Streak is over. Guerrillas of Destiny finally win one in the Dome. I didn't really care for the finish. I thought the rest of the match was actually pretty good. The finish I didn't care for, though. We got a Jon Moxley promo filmed in a New Japan USA ring, holding his IWGP United States Championship that he has not defended since a match against Minoru Suzuki in February of last year. So we're going on almost one full year without a U.S. title defense. Moxley said that everybody who has fought for the right to challenge him probably thought they would get off easy, but they're wrong. He called himself the boogeyman of New Japan, and whoever wins the contract tonight, he's coming for him. So, at least we know they're not stripping him of the title. I mean, at this point, why the hell would they? It's been a year. If you were going to strip him, it would have happened at least 6 months ago. Just wait until he's ready and able. Kenta put his U.S. title briefcase on the line for the right to a title match at a later date. Originally was supposed to be against Juice Robinson, who fractured his orbital bone a few weeks ago, and so in his place, Satoshi Kojima. 10 years to the day that Kojima competed in the Tokyo Dome main event against Hiroshi Tanahashi. 50 years young. Stepping in for the injured Juice. Heading into this match, Kojima said, "I'm going for it." Well, these feel-good stories, they don't always have a happy ending. And it did not for Kojima. Pretty basic stuff here. You know, Kojima tried. He went down valiantly. He hit a Kojima cutter for a near fall. Kenta grabbed the briefcase. The referee got bumped. He went to use the case. Kojima knocked it away. Running knee from Kenta and a second one for a near fall. But he finished it off with the go to sleep. And all roads now lead directly to Kenta and Mox. When and where? That is to be determined. But again, this was, you know, basic stuff. I don't know that the finish was really in doubt. I don't think it was. But there were two big announcements on this show that came midway through. The first one was an ad for a New Japan mobile game coming out later this year called Strong Spirits. The other, much bigger announcement, was that New Japan will soon be returning to television in the US and the UK. They have been off the air in the States since Access TV booted them back in 2019. After Anthem purchased the network, Anthem, of course, owns Impact Wrestling. There were stories at that time that they were kind of using that almost like blackmail. You know, like, if you work with us, if you form a working relationship with us, well, maybe we'll let you stay on the network. And those were the reports anyway at the time. I don't doubt that something like that happened because in the end, they got kicked off, or they weren't renewed, whatever happened. And so there has been no New Japan on television anywhere in the States now for over a year. Now, they did not say what network they're either going to or negotiating with, but the deal is said to be very close. And in fact, it could be announced any day now. Now, the announcers did mention the color purple being relevant to the TV deal. And the only TV network I could think of with a purple logo that could realistically be a landing spot is beIN Sports. I was thinking, okay, what networks here in the States currently air wrestling, right? You got USA, you've got TNT, Ring of Honor is on some syndicated stations in a lot of places, but MLW Fusion is on beIN Sports. In fact, they just inked a new deal with them to extend their partnership back in October. And so unless there's some kind of exclusivity clause in that contract, I'm just going to take a wild guess that they are the leading contender. I have nothing to base that on outside of the color purple. Maybe Barney the fucking dinosaur is going to sit in on commentary. I don't know. But wherever they land, hopefully it's not some place like Destination America or one of those stations that I think 15 people had access to when Impact was on there. But that's great news. That is great news because it's really hurt them, you know, not having that TV clearance here in the States. It's one of the reasons why I was pushing for some kind of working relationship with them in AEW. Because at least if they could come to some kind of an agreement, whether it's a talent exchange or something along those lines, you know, to have any kind of exposure for the New Japan product live on TNT would be huge. But it would have been better than nothing because they've had nothing since Access booted them. So again, this is great news, and we should know very soon exactly where they are going to end up. We had Hiroshi Tanahashi, the ace of New Japan, against the great Okan for a Tanahashi match in the Tokyo Dome. This was massively disappointing. At no time did I buy the great Okan as an opponent for Hiroshi Tanahashi. And I just thought on top of that, the match was boring. I mean, it was mostly Tanahashi selling, and Tanahashi is very good at that. You know, he's always selling something, selling the knee or the arm, usually the knee. But he was selling for the great Okan, who is the single... He is, I'm watching this guy in his offense and his moves. Yeah, you know what? His offense offends me. He has the single worst face claw that I have ever seen in my life. I would think if he put that face claw on a child, on an infant, the child would laugh in his face. This guy's offense sucks. Okan hit an inverted suplex for a two count, then grabbed the chair. He tried for a dominator on the chair. Tanahashi slid out, hit the twist and shout. And Tanahashi went up, hit the high fly flow right across the back, flipped him over, and hit a second high fly flow for the win. And all I wrote down here was The Rock had to give Billy Gunn the rub at SummerSlam, and Tanahashi did the same for the great Okan. I don't ever need to see this again. This was the low point for me of this main card. I did not like this. Which is good, because now that we got that out of the way, we can get to the stuff that I loved, which was the two main events. I call it two main events. Kazuchika Okada, one-on-one against Will Ospreay with B. Priestley in his corner. This is where the show began to really feel like a Wrestle Kingdom. The first great match of the night. I thought the best match. I thought this was even better than the main event. They were pretty comparable, but I would give the edge to this match if I had to pick a favorite. We got Big Match Okada back here at the Dome, looking like he had just rolled out of the tanning bed. Hailed a taxi to the Tokyo Dome right from the tanning salon. Now, back in October, Ospreay defeated Okada in their A-block match in the G1. After the match, Ospreay turned heel. He attacked Okada. He announced he was leaving Chaos to form his own stable, although he picked the great Okan. So I don't know that that speaks very well to the intelligence of Will Ospreay. He countered a dropkick attempt with a running powerbomb for a near fall. They went back to the floor. Earlier in the match, Ospreay had pulled up the protective mats outside the ring to expose the wood platform that the ring was elevated on. Okada teased a tombstone on the platform. Ospreay instead suplexed him over the barricade, dropped him straight down through two tables. And Ospreay dragged Okada back into the ring, hit a springboard forearm strike off the top rope, right to the back of the head for a near fall. Running powerbomb for a two count. Ospreay teased a stormbreaker off the apron on the exposed floor. Okada blocked it. Ospreay teased an os cutter from the post to the apron. Okada blocked that, hit a tombstone on the apron. Ospreay ducked another Rainmaker, I think this was maybe his second Rainmaker attempt, I don't remember, but Okada hit a drop kick, and Okada used his Money Clip submission. Boy, does he love that move, and boy, does it suck. Why does he keep going back to the Money Clip? Why? Like, I understand if he wants a submission in his arsenal. Why not, like, a good old cross-face chicken wing? How about that? That is a painful hold. Looks good. Legitimately painful. Looks devastating. Anything but the Money Clip. Rocky Romero said it had been a year since Okada used the Rainmaker, or at least connected with one, which I had not realized it had been that long. Ospreay slid out of the Money Clip, but ended up right in a spinning tombstone. Okada went right back to his favorite move. B. Priestley jumped up on the apron. Okada threw Ospreay into Priestley. She took a bump off the apron, but he would not let go. He held onto that Money Clip. Eventually, Ospreay reached the bottom rope to force the rope break. Ospreay did connect with the top rope Spanish fly for a near fall. And Ospreay escaped another Money Clip, connected with an Os Cutter. Okada kicked out. These guys were killing each other with strikes here down the stretch. Ospreay teased a hidden blade. Okada caught him with a drop kick. Best drop kick in the business. Ospreay ducked a spinning Rainmaker, went up top. Okada caught him, though, coming off the top with another drop kick. Ospreay escaped the Money Clip, hit a tombstone, and a Rainmaker of his own for a near fall. Okada blocked a Stormbreaker, hit a sit-out tombstone, followed with one Rainmaker for the win. Sometimes you've seen Okada matches where he'll hit, feels like 16 of those Rainmakers. All he needed here was one. And he got the three count at the 35-minute mark. A fantastic effort from both men. You know, and there are New Japan matches, you know, on these big shows, they tend to go long. Sometimes I'm looking at my watch, depending on who's in the ring. This just breezed by. These guys were just, they were in the zone doing their thing, and at no point did I feel like it went long. If anything, it felt like it was a 35-minute match that felt like maybe it was 25. I just thought this was fantastic. Ospreay gets his first big main event style match at the Tokyo Dome. And even in defeat, he delivers. Okada in these big matches always delivers. Two thumbs up. Main event was Tetsuya Naito against Kota Ibushi. Double title match for the IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental titles. So after winning his second straight G1 climax, Ibushi was beaten for his briefcase last month by Jay White. First time that's ever happened. Jay White's going to get his shot tomorrow night, which, as I am recording this, is really only a few hours away. But today it was Ibushi's turn. This is something that Naito demanded, so Ibushi got the shot. Were it not for the double gold dash stuff they did last year and the whole story arc with Naito looking for redemption, I think it would have been Ibushi's time in last year's Wrestle Kingdom. It did not happen. Here in this match, they did not kill each other. That's the good news, although they did try in a few spots. This was still safer than the last match I saw the two of them have. I've seen these guys try stuff on the apron that just makes me cringe. And thankfully, they toned it down a little bit here in this match. They fought to the floor. Naito hit a belly-to-back suplex on the ramp. This was in the first few minutes of the match. And Ibushi made it back into the ring at the count of 15. And I made a note here because as I'm watching this, and it happened a few times on this show, you have the dramatic, you know, once you get into that 15 to 20 range, those dramatic possible countouts on these shows, I would love to see WWE and AEW adopt the Japanese or New Japan style of the 20 count, with either the referee or the ring announcer, whoever they want it to be, calling out the numbers over the PA system so everybody can hear it, and then getting more animated as they get closer and closer to the 20 count. And look, I understand you can't just replicate it exactly, because a lot of times in WWE and AEW and a lot of the Western, you know, wrestling stuff that we see here in this country, guys can be outside for 5 minutes. And then you're thinking, wait a minute, how are they not counted out? And it's just because those are the kind of spots they like working into those matches. So you would have to adapt it. You know, you can mix in some of that Western influence. So for example, you know, if they want two guys to brawl out into the crowd and they're going to be out there for a while, well, okay, the referee has discretion. He or she can show leniency and just let them fight in certain spots, especially if it's like a big main event match. All right, let them go. You can always find a way to make it work, but just mix in these other elements. I just really like the sense of urgency that it creates as they get closer to 20. And if you think that they give people more time in New Japan to get back into the ring just because it's a 20 count and not a 10 count, listen to this fucking guy count to 20, all right? He barely takes a breath. I would even argue that a 20 count in New Japan is quicker than a typical 10 count in WWE. But I'd love to see them mix some of that influence into the product and make some of these countouts or possible countouts in matches here more dramatic like they are in New Japan. But Naito hit a neck breaker off the apron to the floor. Ibushi teased a package pile driver on the apron. Naito blocked it, backdropped him on the apron. Ibushi hit what I thought was the coolest fucking thing in this match, and the most dangerous. Hit a hurricanrana off the apron to the floor. So many things can go wrong on the landing for both guys. In fact, when Naito went flying, if you go back and watch the replay, it looked like his leg or his foot smacked the guardrail. I was a little worried maybe he broke his foot, but he seemed to be okay. They teased the count out. Naito made it back inside just in the nick of, I mean, barely. 19 3/4. This guy made it back inside. Naito hit a reverse Frankensteiner off the top rope. Teased a Destino. Ibushi blocked the attempt. Teased the Kamigoye, but Naito avoided it. Hit the Destino. And Ibushi kicked out. So Naito went for a second one. Ibushi blocked that. Hit a bastard driver. Which is great because it looks like it would break your neck. Like, it looks like a devastating move. But if you really watch it, it's probably one of the safer things I've seen Ibushi do to his opponents. Naito used a rolling kick. Ibushi answered that with a lariat. Hit a last ride powerbomb. What'd they call it when he was in WWE? The Golden Star Powerbomb, right? I don't think they call it that in New Japan. It's called a last ride. But Ibushi maintained wrist control after the last ride, hit a Kamigoye, and Naito kicked out. Ibushi couldn't believe it. Ibushi whiffed on a Phoenix Splash, crashed and burned. Naito hit a second Destino, but Ibushi kicked out. Ibushi slid out of another Destino attempt and hit a second Kamigoye, but again, Naito kicked out. Ibushi looked up at the referee with this look of just bewilderment on his face. He couldn't believe it. Ibushi pulled down his right knee pad. Nothing good ever comes from that. Naito hit an enziguri and went for another Destino, but Ibushi slid out, hit a jumping knee strike, followed by a third Kamigoye, and that was enough to score the three count and capture double gold at the Dome. Kota Ibushi is your new IWGP champion and Intercontinental champion. Both guys were down for a while. Ibushi was fantastic here. He was acting like he didn't even know he had won the match. He didn't even know what day of the week it was. He's looking around. He sees Naito laying there, and he tries for another cover. He tried to pin him. Even though his music is playing, he sees the referee has got both belts in his hand. It's like he just tuned everything out and had no idea. He was trying to win the match. And Red Shoes had to kneel down and tell him, no, no, you've already won. You're the champion. And then once he realized he was the champion, he had a big smile on his face. He broke down. This was great. So Naito grabbed the belts away from Red Shoes before Ibushi could take possession of them. This was like Hogan and Warrior at WrestleMania 6. What's he going to do? Is he going to hand him over? Is he going to waffle him with the belts? What's he going to do? So of course he handed him over, raised Ibushi's arm. Enter Jay White with Ghetto. Jay White comes out, he's got the G1 briefcase that he beat Ibushi for. And Jay White tells him, enjoy your moment, because it's only going to last one night. Said Ibushi will not become God. You've talked about wanting to become God. You will not become God tomorrow. I'm going to expose you as a fraud. Every time you are about to reach the pinnacle or a big moment in your career, I'm going to be there to pull you back down. Said that you're going to help me fulfill my destino tomorrow night when I become God. So they left. And Ibushi took the microphone. He wanted to first thank Naito for the match. And he promised to keep the belts tomorrow and become God tomorrow night. This was an excellent main event. Ibushi gets his crowning moment. And I only hope they don't take it off him in a few hours. But they have to split those titles again soon enough. I don't care if it's Ibushi. I don't care if it's Jay White. They have to split those titles apart. So the Night 2 card looks like this. We've got the King of Pro Wrestling Fatal 4-Way, Bad Luck Fale, Bushi, Chase Owens, and Toriano to crown the first provisional champion of 2021. Junior heavyweight title on the line, tag team titles. El Desperado and Kanemaru defend against Master Wato and Risuke Taguchi. Never open weight title, Shingo Takagi defends against Jeff Cobb. Evil takes on Sonata. Junior heavyweight title on the line, Taiji Ishimori defends against Hiromu Takahashi. And in the main event, the new double champion, Kota Ibushi, defends against Jay White. That is your Night 2 lineup. I'm going to try to have another audio review up for you either later tomorrow night or sometime on Wednesday. So watch for that to pop up in your feed. It's going to be audio only. And I will see you guys live, though, on video. As always, in prime time, 10 p.m. Wednesday night, reviewing the first AEW show of the new year. New Year Smash, Night 1. Take care, guys.